know-it-all students. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with instant illumination. Know-it-all students. Oh, how about that? Oh, yes. Both students and teachers and sharers alike have so many know-it-all students. And to start out with, the most know-it-all student of all is the teacher. Oh, yes. The most know-it-all student of all is the teacher. The teacher thinks the teacher knows it all. The teacher thinks the teacher knows how to teach. The teacher thinks that the students are there just to be poured into them information and facts and things like that. But the know-it-all student is ineffectual in every possible way. Now, as I said, we start out with the teacher. Now, how is the teacher a know-it-all student? Well, the teacher knows it all. Instead of the teacher getting so excited about whatever the teacher is teaching and sharing that enthusiastically with those who are with her, eager to have her point of view, her knowledge, her sharing, eager for that illumination. For those who really care, those she created in her world or he created in his world, to come to their side and say, come, tell me all about history. Tell me all about love. Tell me all about life. Tell me all about... And then the teacher, in all the wisdom of the teacher, says, the learning takes place within you. And the teacher says this to themselves, not to the students, and not to themselves either. But the teacher realizes that if the teacher is going to be excited about whatever it is that they are pretending to teach, whatever it is that they want to share, if they are excited about it, that excitement is the greatest teaching tool that has ever been known. Students who are know-it-all students are know-it-all students because the teacher thinks that it is the source of the wisdom for the student, never realizing that it is to illuminate the student to have its own source of wisdom within it be revealed to it. And this is a tough thing. It's a very tough thing because it's not what humanity teaches. It's not what humanity says learning is. It's not what humanity says the technique of understanding the inner principles are. Humanity says this is something that is hard to come by. We have to go to school and we have to learn and we have to pour it into ourselves, force it into ourselves like an ugly medicine. And it is not that at all. The know-it-all student should be the first reminder to the teacher that that's what the teacher is doing. The know-it-all student is reflecting whatever the teacher is thinking in the teacher's mind, heart, and being. Now, there will be no know-it-all students when there are no know-it-all teachers. And there'll be no know-it-all teachers when every teacher feels that it has the greatest privilege in the entire universe, the privilege of sharing what it has as its enthusiasm with whomever comes into its contact. Now, when a teacher goes to school, for instance, and the students come to school, and the teacher thinks blah, 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 and shares with the students so disjointedly and so unimaginatively and unexcitedly, the student soon loses interest in learning. And their minds are many other places and not on where the teacher would have them be. But when a teacher comes into the classroom each day, when a mother comes into the, the room of the child each day, when the parent comes into the life of the child each day and says to them, "Wow, what exciting things are we going to do today? Oh, my goodness sakes, the world is just full of exciting things to do. What are we going to do? Oh, we're going to learn mathematics? Oh, hey, come on, let's think about mathematics. Isn't mathematics exciting? You know, mathematics is a foundation of everything, but so be it. Okay, now, here's some illustrations." And then the parent comes up with illustrations of mathematics, the thing that the child is going to be studying most in school that day. And As a parent comes up like a teacher and gets excited about mathematics, "Did you know that I put 8 olives on the plate last night and only 7 people ate them? And how many olives were left?" "Well, naturally there's 1. "But there wasn't. Where did it go?" "Well, I don't know. I left it on the saucer, on the table, and when I went back to get it, it was gone. Now, who took it?" "Well, none of us took it. You know, we told you. We just had our own single olive." "Oh, I know who took it. The cat went up on the table and took the olive and then threw it on the floor because it didn't like the taste of the olive." "Oh, is that what happened? Well, how many olives did we eat?" "We ate 7. And how many olives were on the table?" 8. "Where did that other olive go?" "The cat took it." "Oh, then if you had 1 olive away from 8, how many would you have?" "You'd have 7. "Oh, but there's 7 of us." "That's right, there's 7 of us. Now, how many pieces of cake do I have to put on the table?" 7. "And what about that one little piece that's left over?" "Well, that goes to the person who could answer the question most lovingly." "What question, Mom? What question? Tell me so I can answer the question lovingly, because I want that piece of cake." "How many pieces of cake are on the table?" 8. "Why are there 8 pieces of cake on the table when there's only 7 of us here?" "Well, we haven't learned to cut the cake perfectly into 7 pieces. We always cut it into 8. "Well, why don't you slice up the 8th piece into 7 pieces and then give us each a little piece like that?" Or ask a question and say, "Whoever can answer this question gets the 8th piece." "Now, what's the question, Mom?" "I know, we talked about that, didn't we?" "Well, now the question is, how wide is the world? What's the diameter of the world?" "But, Mom, it's right up there on the wall. That's the world picture right up there on the wall. That's the map, see? And it says right down below it that the world is so many miles wide." "Well, now, can you see what it says?" "Yeah, it says whatever it says." "Well, now, does everybody know that that's there?" "Well, the littler kids don't know that." "Well, now, should we tell everybody it's there?" "Okay, so we'll go and have dinner, and then after dinner, that one piece of cake is left, and then Mama says, "All right, kids, look at the map of the world right up here on the wall. See it? Now, the map has a circumference, and it has a diameter. Now, who can tell me what the diameter of the world is?" And the littlest kid says, "The line drawn right straight through it. Like you told us, Mommy, the line drawn right straight through it." And Mommy says, "That is correct. That is the diameter." "But," the other child, the older child says, "I thought it was supposed to tell you how many miles it was." "I didn't ask you that. I said, what is the diameter of the world? Now, the diameter of the world is so many miles. But the diameter of the world is the line drawn through it. Now, we must remember, what is the real question? How many miles is the diameter of the world? That's one question. What is the diameter of the world? That's another question. But, Mom, that's not right. It's supposed to be the miles. No, it isn't. All of our questions that we ask in life are based upon facts, points. How old are you? Well, Jimmy's 8, and I'm 1 year less, so I'm 7. I didn't ask you how old Jimmy was. I asked you how old you are. But I always use Jimmy as an example because I can remember how old Jimmy was because Jimmy makes such a big thing about being a year older than me. Jimmy, how old is Ronnie? Ronnie is 6. Well, why do you say he's 6? Because I'm 7, and he's a year younger than me, and I know that he's 6. And so I say he's 6. Is that correct, Jimmy? Ronnie? Yep. Is that correct, Jimmy? Yep. All right. Ollie, is that correct? No. How old is he? He is Mommy's what? He is Mommy's 6th child. Out of 7? Oh, my. Isn't that interesting? All sorts of ways of thinking about mathematics. Oh, were we thinking about mathematics, Mom? Yes, we were. Now, we're going to go out to the Lake Cottage after school today. It's a Friday. We're going to go to the Lake Cottage, and we're going to spend the weekend at the Lake Cottage. Oh, goody, goody, goody! And how far is the Lake Cottage from our home here in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin? Oh, it's 30 miles. Yes, that's right. Now, how long does it take us to get there? It takes us about 45 minutes. Well, why does it take us so long to get there? Well, we're only allowed to drive so fast, and we have so far to go, and so that's how we figure it out. Well, how do you know that 45 minutes it's going to take to go 30 miles? That doesn't seem to be balancing. That's the way it is, Mom. When you take the speed of the car, and you take the distance, and then you come up with how long it takes. Oh, I see. Gee, that's exciting, isn't it? Okay, Grandma lives 100 miles away down in Kingston, Illinois. Now, how do we get to Grandma's house? How long does it take us to get there? We have to drive all that way, 100 miles. Well, Mom, we're driving at 50 miles an hour. This is in 1930. We're driving at 50 miles an hour, and that would take us 2 hours to get to Grandma's house. Well, we're not always driving 50 miles an hour, are we? We have to get out of the city, and we have to go through other cities on the way to Kingston, Illinois. And as we go through these cities, we've got to slow down, and then we start up again. Now, how long does it really take? Oh, I don't know. I would guess it takes us 2.5 hours. Well, that's about right. It takes us 2.5 hours. Because going through the cities and slowing down and starting up again and not having a consistent 50 miles an hour means we have that. Well, how do you know that, Mom? Well, by experience. Because we've driven to Grandma's house often, and every time we go there, it's 2.5 hours. And so I planned so many games for us to play in the car for that 2.5 hour trip, and so many sandwiches, and so many apples and oranges and other things to take along so we can all be amused and enjoy our ride. Oh, Mommy, that's wonderful. Well, kids, that is arithmetic. Arithmetic. That doesn't sound like arithmetic. That just sounds like fun. That's right. And arithmetic is always fun. It's always fun when you can apply it to the circumstances of your life and not think of it as numbers and think of it as figures that you have to learn, but think of it as ideas. Now, how long does it take us to get to Grandma's house from here? 2.5 hours. Now, what if we went on the train? Well, it would still take 2.5 hours. Because we have to go to the train depot, wait for the train, get on the train, get off the train at Kingston, Illinois, and then we have to walk from the train depot to Grandma's house. Well, it probably even takes us 3 hours. Well, it would seem driving a car would be much better. Oh, but you can run around in the train, and you can go up and down the aisle, and you can do all sorts. Yes, but we have to stop and think. Isn't it interesting? When we get in the train, I have to pay how many tickets? 8 tickets. 7 kids and me. Yes. And when I drive the car, How much does it cost for gas and oil to drive the car? Oh, it costs $20. $20? Now, how much does it cost for gas to go that distance? Oh, it costs about $4. That's right. A train is much more expensive, isn't it? The train is expensive because we go by so many people. The car is just one car, but however many people you can pack in the car, that's all gratis. That's all extra and good. Mama, you make learning mathematics so much fun. I like mathematics. Mom, can we learn some more mathematics? Can we learn some more of that? What? How do we learn more mathematics? Well, you see, you don't have know-it-all children when you learn in that way. You don't have a know-it-all mother. The mother says, let's think this through together. Let's go through these ideas together. And when you have a feeling of respect for yourself and respect for whoever it is you're working with, everything works out beautifully. Our life is just filled with wonderful gifts and wonderful joys and wonderful lives. And when we have a know-it-all attitude or we know-it-all student, then they think they know it all and they miss all the little extras that go with that knowing. Oh, they may know how to add the numbers 1, 2, 3, but they don't know that 1 is Mama and 2 is Junior and Polly and 3 is a neighbor child who is going along with us. Oh, yes. And now 1, 2, 3, so that's how much? The neighbor child is 1, but it's number 3. And our 2 children are 2, and Mama is 1. So that's 3, 2, plus 1, plus 1 is 4. Now, how do you get 4 out of 1, 2, 3? Well, as you think these things together, and as you think about them, they become fun, and they become wonderful, and they become understandable. And then, when a child's in school and the teacher in school brings up problems of this nature, the child instantly is at home with them, instantly feels comfortable with them. And instantly, the teacher has no know-it-all children, but delight in all learning children. We all have the opportunity to be delight in all beings if we wish. But when we are know-it-all, we close ourselves off from the inspiration, the enthusiasm, the joy, the delight of being aware of ideas coming to us from a variety of different directions, a variety of different points of view. And that's what makes life interesting. That's what makes life fun. And that's what makes life a joyous, wonderful, beautiful experience. And that's what you are. And that's what I am. And we all will have that experience every day of our life when we live our life from the point of view that life is fun. Life's a joy. Know it all, students? Not in my world. Have a lovely day and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.